The Gambling Files Podcast, the podcast that doesn't touch itself when it thinks of you. Hello and welcome to The Gambling Files Podcast, the podcast that has facial hair. I'm your host, John Bruford, joined by my co-host, Fintan Costello. Hello, Fintan.
Hello, John.
Hi.
Hey.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm all right. You?
Yeah, you know. Eggman's just been.
Nice.
Yeah.
How many eggs did you get?
66.
66 eggs?
Yeah.
What type? Like just regular chicken eggs or are you like fancy kind of
quail regular chicken
or goose
eggs.
Or anything like that?
Yeah, because I come across like
ostrich.
I come across like a fucking dinosaur egg eater.
I don't know. I could see you tucking into an ostrich egg or something.
I mean, I would if one were available. Don't get me wrong. You know, I had scrambled eggs this morning. Oh, how many eggs? One. but so
then you had scrambled egg this morning then.
Oh, yes. Good shout. Yeah. But no, so he comes, every 2 weeks.
Hmm.
He brings eggs,
yep.
Hence his name, the Eggman.
Nice.
And I get a tray for Fern and the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a tray for me, and I got an extra six for me. So I got nice. 36 eggs, and they get 30.
And it's like it's his chicken place or something? Or
Yeah, I believe so. I think it's him and his brother.
Nice. Probably the only thing I miss from living in the Isle of Man, apart from the income tax rate, was my wife on a Friday used to go to this market, farmer's market, and there was a little old Northern Irish lady, and she had potatoes and eggs that were just utterly fantastic. And then she teamed up with the farm next door, which was like a pig farm or whatever the name is for that. And she made the best Scotch eggs that I've ever had.
Now, right. See, if you're talking Scotch eggs, do you know what I mean?
And it's like fresh eggs, really good pork. So for the American listeners, a Scotch egg is a whole egg cooked, wrapped in like a pork ball with like a bready type crumb on the outside. And it was just like my
better than it sounds
favorite thing in the world.
Right.
It was
so
amazing.
When I go to Ludlow to pick up my kids, I stop at two places. I might have to start stopping at three places, but two definitely. So there's a place on the market in Ludlow, which is Kiesel's Farm. And it's one of very, very few free range pork farms in the UK. And unfortunately, they're closing in about 6 weeks. Because the cost of doing everything has just absolutely fucked them.
Mm.
But they use their own free-range pork to make pork pies, Scotch eggs, sausage rolls, and they are absolutely glorious. I mean, they're just wonderful. But there's a place in Ludlow that I think does slightly better, even though they might not have the same quality of pork, because there's this thing that happens with a Scotch egg, right? Once it's been refrigerated, it's very different.
Yeah. It changes.
Fat changes state, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a butcher's in Ludlow, Walls Butchers, which I go to at least once a week. I spend loads of money with them because they're awesome. But their Scotch eggs, they cook fresh daily.
Yep.
And if you're in there at the right time and they come out and they're still warm, and they haven't been refrigerated, and they have a crispy outer layer.
Yeah.
They're just glorious.
Oh, that sounds perfect.
But there's another place. And I was reminded of this by Fern, actually. She went with one of the kids to another butcher's in town called Carter's, because Ludlow, it's a town of 11,000 people. I think there are five butchers. Six, if you include the one at Bromfield. And she went into Carter's, and they're lovely, lovely people, and another terrific butcher slightly outside of town. Used to be in the middle of town. It's controversial. Anyway, they do a black pudding Scotch egg, which for any North American listeners would be a blood sausage Scotch egg.
Yeah,
So that's a mixture of black pudding, sausage meat, breadcrumbs on the outside, egg in the middle. And when Fern, I think it was Fern and Annie, when Fern and Annie got theirs, they were still warm. And those still warm are different class.
Brilliant.
So yeah, it's, I hear you on the Scotch egg front. But Fintan, that's not what we've come to discuss today.
What are we here to discuss today, John?
The gambling industry.
Of course, that bloody thing. It never ends.
I know, right?
There's always something going on in the news.
Always something going on.
And as a man with his finger on the pulse, what have you seen?
That's a great question, Fintan, and one I'm very happy to answer. MGM, thinking about buying Entain.
Again?
Yeah. Seriously.
What's the exchange? I suppose because the exchange rate will be better. Oh, hang on a second. Let me have a look. Entain share price.
It's not going to be much better, is it? But I suppose when you're dealing in billions, it's quite a big percentage.
Yeah. Entain share price 1 year. Yeah, so they're basically... So it's not as though the share price has collapsed. They're basically flat. Year over year.
But, right, that thing... You know that thing that happened with... bollocks. Who was it? Who bought that thing and it had William Hill in it?
Caesars?
Who bought that thing? Jesus.
So Caesars.
Right.
And then they flipped the offshore stuff, or the non-American stuff, to Triple H.
Yeah.
And ended up in a, like, that was like proper deal making. Like, that was big boy.
That's incredible. But they made the cost of the whole acquisition back on just divesting the UK assets, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So I've seen this BetMGM story. Excuse me, I'm sorry. I've seen it in a couple of different places, and a couple of people have alluded to, I think. Okay, I don't think I could have thought of this myself. Although nobody said this explicitly, but this is where my brain went anyway, right? So they reckon probably that the delays to the UK gambling white paper are going to mean March, right?
Okay, not sooner.
Apparently not, but let's face it, it's anybody's guess, but apparently there are a couple of significant delays, which obviously nobody's saying what it is, but given that they never gave a date, can you really say they're delays?
Yeah, of course.
My bet is that MGM is going to wait until the white paper lands, because even if you don't have insider knowledge of what's in the white paper, you know somebody's getting dicked.
Oh, for sure. They've dragged it on so long, they have to do something.
And the BGC certainly has been shouting a lot about affordability checks, and people have been saying that affordability checks are having a colossal impact on their business, because their bigger bettors are saying, I'm not sending you my friend's fucking bank statements.
Why would you send your friend's bank statements?
It's just something I saw on Twitter. Okay. Is it true? I don't know. And people are saying that the affordability checks, as they stand, are prohibitive and intrusive and bollocks.
But we had that. We had
Charles Cohen.
Yeah. See, he's already fixed it. Like, fucking, like, why aren't they just doing that?
We know how to fix it. We go see the Department of Trust.
The Department of Trust, and just plug in their thing and bish bosh, job done. Like, it's a... So
apparently,
it's not
that simple.
Or it's a good... Look, if you look at this, this is all PR, right? So the PR would be, oh my God, this is dreadful, blah, 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 blah. And then the rules come in and maybe they're a little bit watered down or whatever. And then they'll just ring up Charles and just implement his open banking solution and chop that.
You'd hope so. Because Charles seems like a really nice fella.
Oh, he's when you look at his career, like, he's put himself in the right places for the right emerging trends. So, like, he was doing mobile slot stuff long before anybody and things like this. So it's, I have a lot of respect. But it's open banking, right? So, like, anybody can go build those APIs and do that stuff. So there'll be 20 solutions in the next couple of years.
Yeah, but his is there now.
I know, and he gets it.
But that wasn't where I was going with this. Although I'm always happy to talk about Charles and Department of Trust. What I'm saying is, affordability checks are very likely to be a big part of this white paper, and they're likely to be the more contentious part of the white paper.
Sure.
And likely to have the most impact.
Yep.
Now, that impact is likely to be negative.
Mm-hmm.
And despite Entain being a global business, the UK arm of that business is a cornerstone.
Yeah, I was just looking at their brands. They've got Ladbrokes, Coral, Foxy Bingo, Gala. Like, they're all solid UK brands. And then obviously there's other brands like Party Casino. What else have they got? Yeah, Party Casino, the other one.
They've got a big chunk of a big gambling market.
Yep.
And it's going to be hit by it. And as a result, their share price is going to be hit by it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're MGM, you're going to wait for that white paper to land, wait for that share price to tank just a little bit. Fuck the exchange rate. If that share price goes down by 8%, that's going to offset the takeover bounce.
Hmm.
So that's more than likely what they're waiting for. I mean, there's also the fact that there isn't really anybody else that could buy it as a whole, I wouldn't have thought.
Well, not with the JV, because you would imagine if there is a JV like that, there'd be some really good covenants in the contracts around.
Yeah. Because very smart, very expensive lawyers almost certainly wrote that.
Super smart American lawyers all over it.
Teams and teams of them. In preparation for this recording, I've been watching a lot of John Grisham thrillers on streaming services. And I feel now I'm prepared.
Good.
The most recent one was Runaway Jury, so you know. I think I've got the whole gamut of American legal services right here, right in my noggin, my cue ball noggin. I'm thinking they're going to wait for that white paper to land and then pounce. It makes sense because the kind of things that will affect a share price by, say, 8% ever. We're talking about a very small number of events that can have an impact like that on anything. The white paper is that thing for probably the next 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
You sound skeptical.
No, I'm just thinking just like 8%, you know, I know we're just making up numbers and stuff, but it's...
Pull it out of my ass.
Yeah. Like the share price can fluctuate.
Yeah, but of no, course, I'm just thinking it's huge numbers.
It's highly trade. Well, because it's highly liquid, so the volatility is not as much. If you're a smaller company and you've got less shares traded, your price can vary quite a lot. It makes sense. It would give MGM global exposure, or it would resolve and bring in house the JV, which would unlock more revenue and tech and all, you know, there's a lot of upsides for that.
What I reckon you'll see is a similar thing to that Caesars deal. The divest the UK portfolio, which will cover the cost of the rest of it or pretty damn close.
Well, the thing is,
wind up with this brilliant product for the US, because what I'd bet one of your kidneys on this. I bet that they're looking at, because if you look at the split in the US between states that have online casino, states that just have sports betting, the numbers are, you know, sports betting, expensive to acquire customers, et cetera, et cetera. The profit numbers aren't big. Casino, the numbers are entirely different. And you've got that thing where the difficult part of regulatory is establishing the framework. In so many states, that's done with sports betting. It's a relatively small step.
Oh, for sure. Like that's definitely going to happen, right? So the casino, online casino in America is coming. because it's one of the, you know, we're about, like, we're in a recession. Like, Google laid off 12% of its workforce, like 6% of its workforce in America and 6% globally last week. All the big tech firms are laying people off. Everybody's kind of going back to a different world. So inflation's high, you know, recession's coming, right? Or if we're not already in it. If you're a state governor and you've got a tax hole and you've already passed sports betting, online sports betting, pressing the online casino buttons, one of the easiest things you can do to fill a tax gap.
Interesting fact though, right? In the UK, we're not in recession.
I would disagree with that.
Yeah, but the thing is, right, when you say recession, when you say we are in recession, there is an element of panic that goes with that. And being in recession causes recession to kind of deepen to an extent, because people are recession, right? But recession is, by definition, two consecutive quarters of negative growth.
Yep.
Right? Or two negative quarters of contraction. I hate hearing the term negative growth, and I hear it on the news all the time. Two quarters of contraction, consecutive quarters. And the thing in the UK is the last quarter of last year, there was 0.1% growth. Now, that was almost certainly because of one very, very specific thing. Bear with me here, because I don't know much about much. But I did say this at the time. What happened was people had mortgage deals agreed, and there was a point at which those mortgage deals expired. So their offer is going to expire, and people ran like Usain Bolt to buy a house, any house, knowing what is coming. Because let's face it, the signs have been more than on the door. So you had this buoyancy of the housing market, which in any capitalist economy pretty much is a huge part of the bubble. And so that last quarter in the UK was completely buoyed by expiring mortgage deals and people rushing to them, knowing that they weren't going to see them again for probably 4 years. So we don't officially have two quarters of contraction and won't have for a little while.
So my counterpoint to that would be, and this is going to sound really weird, I can't even know what I'm going to say. If you look at the luxury secondhand watch market in the UK versus Europe, prices are coming down faster in the UK and they are cheaper in the UK. People are offloading assets, easy assets, to free up cash in the UK, and bad times are ahead as a leading indicator.
It's a buyer's market.
Not yet. There's still a bit of headroom in there. But also, like, okay, so just going back to the Entain MGM stuff, an alternative. So Entain had an announcement last week, I just remembered, where they said they're going to pull out of gray markets. apart from the gray markets that are going to regulate or could regulate or had a pathway to regulation, maybe some kind of weasel word.
Loved it. I just, so you know, I replied to the release straight away to say, do you want to put somebody on the Gambling Files podcast? Because I thought my money, we've already had the press release of the year.
Well, they didn't name the countries, which I thought was interesting.
Oh, that was my favorite part.
Yeah. But if...
Maybe they mean grey markets slightly differently. Maybe they just mean older players.
I fucking doubt it. But if you were... So, look, if I had a company and I was getting myself ready to be bought by a large licensed land-based operator in the US, getting rid of all the questionable stuff would make it a much easier acquisition. Because Jennifer, and she's talked about, from a licensing perspective, for a Las Vegas licensing perspective, they will look at your worldwide activities. Like, you can't just be like, oh, we're compliant in Las Vegas and then do whatever else you want anywhere else.
Yeah. So
your global footprint matters?
I've been recording a podcast for the Gaming Boardroom.
Yes.
With a regulator by the name of Brendan Busman. And it's called Busman's Holiday.
Of course it is.
And Brendan, one of the questions that came up was when we got to the section about licensing, was about how different states have completely different criteria. Like there's one operator who's licensed everywhere except New Jersey, for example. Well, why not New Jersey? What's okay with the others that's not okay? You know what I mean? They're all totally different. It is essentially 50 countries.
Yeah.
With no overarching federal framework and no overarching approval framework. Yeah, it's not the Wild West, but it is a bit of a, I believe the American term is crapshoot. Something very different in the UK.
So maybe there's, I think it'll be an interesting one to see how it plays out this year. Big question.
Yeah.
Who do we have on the podcast today?
That is both a big and a good question. We've got Jay Sater, top Indian gambling lawyer bloke. One of the cornerstones of Gateway 2 Gaming. That's with a 2 gaming, which is the leading gambling info portal for India. He's also a lovely fella. Jay is talking about a new draft regulatory thing for online gaming in India, and it's
good news for fantasy cricket, bad news for offshore gambling.
Bad news for anybody that wants clarity in their regulatory.
That too, which is why you need a good lawyer like Jay.
That's a good shout. I wonder if he's had a contribution to this. And he's using it to drum up business.
I doubt it.
He's like the government phone him up. It's like, Jay, what do you want? What do you want?
No,
mate?
He wants it simplified. He made that clear on the.
But
on
I will say this, right? Jay has got the most honest face I've ever seen on a lawyer.
You can't say that.
Well, I mean, I haven't met them all.
But like, we've lots of lawyers on here who I'd trust my life to. You can't just like.
Jeez, I don't know. Jennifer looks a bit dodgy. No, I'm just kidding. But he just looks so youthful.
That's just clean living, that, and a good skincare regime. He moisturizes clearly. That's all it takes.
Yeah, he almost certainly does.
We talked about that the last time with him, I think.
I might have to try it though. I've got to do something. You're starting to look like an old man's ball bag. And not in a good way.
I don't think there's ever a good way. I don't think there's ever a good version of that. Oh, wow, that's amazing. It's so pretty.
What's your routine? Well, I sprinkle a little vinegar on my face in the mornings. So, Jay, Sir MGM, I think, we've set the world to rights there.
Let's do it.
We join our first guest, our only guest, because that's how we roll now. We are joined by Jay Sater of, what isn't Jay involved with? He's a man with his finger in so many pies. We call him Pie Finger unofficially. Jay, the two things that that people will probably know you for from this podcast and from the wider gambling world, you are a lawyer based in India. You're involved in Gateway 2 Gaming. That's 2 Gaming, Gateway 2 Gaming, and with the recent event in Goa for the industry. Jay, welcome.
Thank you, John and Fintan. Always great to be on the Gambling Files podcast.
What can I say? Jay, we love you because you set such a low bar for happiness. Before we start recording, we were having a conversation about whether Fintan's hair would give him an advantage in basketball. And so we had to look up whether you can use your hair in basketball. And it turns out you can make contact intentionally with any part of the body except the foot. Whoa. What a time to be alive. What a day for learning this has become.
I think Fintan will do great in basketball.
I think so too. I think he could be as big as that basketball guy who's really big.
Shaq.
Yeah, Jordan. Him too. Sure. I was thinking of what's the Chinese player's name? Is it Luol Deng?
Oh.
He's really tall. He is though. He really is. Jay, are there any famous Indian athletes in traditional North American sports?
None, I think. All Indian athletes are far away from basketball or any other North American sport. I mean, I know only of in India we talk only about cricketers, so that's what.
Well, there was a fantastic movie made. I think it was made by Disney with John Hamm as the lead, and it was about a dude who had this brilliant idea to do this like televised. Almost casting thing to find, because he thought India be perfect for this because right. There's so many people into cricket, to find people that could transfer baseball. Their skills to baseball. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I've seen that one, although I don't remember the name.
It's a very memorable film.
Yeah. So, basketball, I don't even think India participates in any basketball events, to be honest.
Well, then it's what we can call optimistically a growth market.
Of course. Yeah, why not?
Because I'm an optimistic person. Yeah. But, Jay, frivolity aside, we are here to discuss something quite important because there's been developments in India, and you, as a person involved in gambling industry information and knowing things, have joined us to tell us about new draft laws. This is iGaming laws, right?
So, there have been, right from the beginning of the new year, there has been quite frantic development in India, I would say, as far as gaming is concerned. On 2nd January, the federal government under the Ministry of Electronics and Information Technology, or MeitY as it's called, released draft rules under a 2-decade-old law called the Information Technology Act, which basically governs internet and internet intermediaries, as they are called, and issued certain draft rules for the online gaming industry. Now, firstly, the first thing to note is that these are just rules under a law, and it's not a formal legislation itself that the federal government intends to undertake. And it is still left, regulation of gambling and betting with the states as it used to be. And just to pull back 3 or 4 days before 2nd of January, the central government amended its business rules, which is basically allotting, subjects to its different ministries. And it made 2 changes. One, it introduced online gaming for the first time and gave the powers to regulate online gaming to MeitY, which is the Ministry of Information Technology. And second, it gave the powers to regulate esports as part of multi-sports events to the sports ministry. So these were the 2 additions, probably not directly related to each other, but these were the only 2 additions made towards the end of December. And that's how on 2nd of January, the ministry issued certain rules for regulating online gaming intermediaries. That's what they are called under the draft rules. The rules are out for public consultation until 25th of January. The ministry has invited comments from everyone who may be interested before it takes a final decision and chooses to or does not choose to go ahead with the draft.
You say that this is and stop me if I'm getting this wrong or if I'm paraphrasing incorrectly, But you mentioned that this was like an addition to a 20-year-old set of laws.
Yes, yes. This was certain rules or guidelines framed under a 20-year-old law. So it's
okay. Is there not the potential for something to be out of date then before it's, you know, in play as the overarching framework is 20 years old?
Yeah. No. My first objection to these rules that were released, and I've officially given it to the ministry, and we had a meeting with the minister himself as well a few days ago, the entire industry. But is that, you know, you can't do this under rules. You need to have a fresh legislation for it, which is passed by parliament. And that is a point that the government is also well aware. And they are trying to bring a new law called the Digital India Act. So that will govern everything, all the transactions covering internet. So it will include Web3, blockchain, e-commerce, and also online gaming. For a fresh legislation, you have to go through a whole process. There will be extensive consultations. There may also be a parliamentary committee. So it could take at least a couple of years, if not more, for that legislation.
But what you get at the end of that is something that's fit for purpose.
That's correct. You are absolutely right. But they wanted to do something immediately. So they tried to fit something which does not fit under the old law and forcefully try to fit something under an old law, and by executive action, not by a legislation, try to bring at least a semblance of some kind of guidelines. But at the end of it, there is just more confusion, to be honest. So while it talks about online game, I'll just read out the definition for our listeners. Online game means a game that is offered on the internet and is accessible by a user through a computer resource if he makes a deposit with the expectation of earning winnings. Then there is explanation which talks about internet, deposit, winnings, etc. So making a deposit with the expectation of earning winnings. But at the same time, the rules later on talk that none of these online games should be associated with gambling or betting, and all these games should comply with all the laws of India, which talks including the gambling and betting laws. I see your reaction. So let me try to...
Yeah, well, there's a playing field just by me where I take the dog sometimes. Yeah. And as you go onto the playing field, it says no dogs. And just by that sign, there's a sign that says pick up after your dog. And there's a thing hanging down where you've got dog poo bags.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like there's a bit of a mixed message there, lads.
Is it a fantasy cricket thing? Is it?
Yeah. Let me come to it now. So this is absolutely confusing, right? These two sentences, as you just spoke about, but without mentioning the word skill games, and I've spoken about skill games in the episodes earlier. So skill games enjoy a special status under Indian state gambling laws, and even putting money or so deposits and winnings on it is not deemed to be illegal. But there was a lot of discussion within various departments of the central government, and they said, let's not use the word skill or not skill, because there are cases pending in the court and the tax guys have a slightly different view on that. So let's make these rules, and when the judgments comes, we'll see about that. The minister also said that wagering of any kind we won't allow on, but he was kind of mentioning about wagering on an event by others, not by the players themselves. So I think in essence, these rules would apply to, skill-based games where there is deposit and winnings involved. So I think that's what these rules would come to. And what constitutes an online game? So the other thing they have done under these rules is they say there will be self-regulatory bodies, industry bodies, which will need recognition from the ministry, and they will regulate the online games. You know, they will recognize certain games. They will provide a certificate, and then there are certain do's and don'ts, like every OGI, online gaming intermediary, has to do KYC, for example. They don't have to allow minors. Then it talks about certain policies, they need to have certain officers in place to address the complaints of the players and so on and so forth. You know, they need to have certain policies or terms and conditions in place on their website and so on and so forth. And this will be governed by a self-regulatory body that will be recognized by the ministry. So it's just confusion and chaos at the end of the day, at the end of the whole thing. And in addition, what is gambling, what is betting can still be defined by the individual states. So you know, we have communicated all these objections to the ministry in our form, in my formal comments at least. And, you know, the other thing is, since these are rules and not a legislation, they can't even provide any penalty for you know, any breach, so to speak, except take away the intermediary status, which means that the platforms can be prosecuted. But in any case, they can be prosecuted under the state law in any case. Yeah. So it does not help much. These rules, as I said, what I understand from it is it's just the first baby step that the government seems to be taking to test the waters. In internal reports also, the government mentions it as an interim measure until a formal legislation comes into place. So that's what these rules are. But and it seems they apply to primarily to skill games without saying it applies to skill games. So there's more confusion and not even finality even for skill-based games like fantasy, poker, and so on.
So just a question on that. So at the beginning, you talked about online gaming and esports. Right. Was there a specific text then around the east? Like esports will be me and you playing Call of Duty against each other for real money? So, or what would that be?
Esports as part of multi-sports events would be handled by the sports ministry. So for example, picking a team to be sent to the Commonwealth Games or Olympics. So there is a process the sports ministry follows in that it recognizes a formal body or a federation, mm-hmm. As the national federation, which can pick and select players to send them to multi-sports events. So okay. That's the only thing that the sports ministry will do as far as esports is concerned.
Okay, so there was nothing around gambling on esports or prizes that for esports online? Those
will be covered under these rules which we are talking about.
Got it. Okay, now I understand.
Only the multi-sport, multilateral events will be covered under the sports
ministry. So it'll be the official team to represent India at the Dota Championships or whatever it is. Yeah.
So this paves the way to officially recognize a body to do all of that.
Yeah, I understand. And because at the beginning as well, you talked about like frantic activity since the beginning of the year. Has there been something to prompt this or to kind of, you know, is there... Nothing happens overnight for a reason. Is there any kind of stuff going on in the background that's made this more urgent than before?
I mean, this kind of, there was an interministerial task force of various ministries that was studying this for the last 6-8 months, and the government was looking at it even from a couple of years. There were 3 or 4 reasons behind that. One was, you know, the states themselves were complaining that, all these online gaming websites are mushrooming and they don't follow, any laws. There is no regulation around it. So that was number one. Second, there was a lot of advertising all over the place, including television by online gaming websites, which included both skill-based websites and offshore gambling betting websites. And there was a lot of complaint that the offshore websites don't comply with any laws. They probably don't pay back the players as well. They use all sorts of shady means to, attract players, including advertising, which is not allowed under the laws of the land. So several complaints were there. And then there were a lot of celebrities who were endorsing these kind of platforms also. So all of this combined, and there was a lot of losses. There were incidents of suicides and people losing money and so on and so forth. So there was a lot of pressure on the ministry and the government to do something. In addition, this was raised in Parliament by MPs a number of times, and the government had promised action in Parliament as well. So that's where these rules come in. And another interesting thing about these rules is that any website which is not compliant with these conditions, I mean, offshore gambling betting websites, which don't take certification from a self-regulatory body, don't do the other things required under these rules, they could possibly be blocked by the ministry under what is Section 69A of the Information Technology Act. So that is another possible action that may come in. Blocking of the domains which the ministry deems is not appropriate or which in their view would qualify gambling or betting. And mind you, this could include even Indian websites, skill-based websites, which in their view, is gambling and betting.
It's pretty complicated shit, isn't it?
It's extremely complicated, and these new rules which we were hoping would bring clarity has actually made it more complicated.
Yeah, they definitely haven't.
Good time to be a lawyer then. Sounds great. It's exactly what you want. Nice and complicated.
Fenton, it's a good time to be alive, never mind just a lawyer. With what I've learned about basketball today and what I've learned about iGaming in India, I'm like...
Opa. Yeah, so much happening. So it sounds like it paves the way then for fantasy cricket, particularly. And
fantasy cricket and some other games also, like Ludo, poker, Rummy.
Rummy.
But again, it makes it complicated for them as well, trust me, with these kind of rules. But the good news is that this could be a first step, and we are looking at a formal legislation in the coming 2 or 3 years, which may actually erase all of this confusion. Or we don't know with the government. But
because if we look at what happened in America with, say, daily fantasy sports, where they were allowed, and it was basically sports betting, right? So you could imagine some very smart guys in India with their fantasy cricket apps, and they'll get that line as close as possible to sports betting as they can.
I think that is what everyone would try to do. I mean, because the traditional draft fantasy model, as you know, involved 11 players or players, actual number of players in real life to be selected. And it was initially season long, but then it became daily. Hmm. And now it could become hourly or I don't know.
Spot or whatever. Yeah, exactly. You could see kind of probably a lot of adaptation within those rules.
Correct. I think that is what is going to happen. Adaptation, innovation, and the line between skill and chance is probably going to get blurred. And hopefully the government will see that as well in the next couple of years and allow the whole thing to be regulated under a federal law, which has been our demand from day one.
Yeah. And is there a chance that a federal law would come in? So like, again, if I use America as the example, as a similar kind of country where the state legislation will definitely happen, but federal legislation won't happen because you've got very religious states. I think where the Mormons are based in Utah or somewhere.
Yeah.
Utah. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a few places where like, it's just not going to happen. On a state level, and the federal then just wouldn't even try. So would there be a situation where they could pass a federal law that would be universally accepted?
I think that is an ideal scenario, and that is something where government has already started contemplation with the Digital India Act that I just spoke about earlier. Of course, it will also depend on a Supreme Court ruling that is pending, which is going to decide whether this would fall under center or state prerogative, because it's online, so it gets complicated. When it's offline, it's clear it's with states. Online, so that would also probably decide where this is headed in terms of what the Supreme Court does.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense.
But hopefully, the larger picture will be seen. And there would be comprehensive regulation instead of a ban. I mean, offshore activity is going on, but I'm sure when it's brought into a formal regulatory framework, nobody would like to be based offshore. People are happy to pay their taxes, be based exactly. in India, and follow reasonable regulations and laws that are to be followed. And by all means, you take action against offshore websites that may still not follow the laws.
So from an offshore perspective, because obviously that's of interest to our listeners as well. So is there a chance in the meantime that, say, URLs get blocked or payment providers get blocked to offshore brands?
Yes, I think that is the intention. And the minister also made it clear in his meetings with industry and policy think tanks and other people, lawyers and others, that they want to, and in his words, he wants to put a full stop to offshore gambling and betting. Some partial URL blocking has already happened. That may just accelerate with these rules if and when they come in finality. And the rules also make it clear that any game which is not registered with a self-regulatory body, advertisers, publishers, hosting providers should not provide or should exercise due diligence before providing services. So advertising, payment processing or hosting service providers are all going to be extremely difficult for offshore operators. Television and other advertising has already stopped because the government issued advisories earlier. They are also going after celebrities who are endorsing this on Instagram or other places. So that's also something where government is serious about. Payment processors also. On the taxation front, although they are based in offshore jurisdictions, but government has sent certain communication and has started the process of trying to recover at least the taxes, although that may not actually be possible because, you know,
yeah, it's tough.
It's in Cayman or Curacao or wherever. So that is there. And so the intention of the government is very clear to block the URLs or to stop this activity of offshore gambling and betting, at least those who are not registered with the authority.
Yeah, and then I suppose the follow-on quick, because what normally happens then is once, say, the payment providers start getting blocked, then the offshore brands switch to more of a crypto, Bitcoin, stablecoin type product offering. Is what's the level of crypto adoption in India?
I mean, crypto adoption is, of course, now we are in a bear market. So, I mean, the enthusiasm or the interest in crypto has certainly dipped, but there was pretty robust numbers that crypto platforms or crypto exchanges saw, and there are probably hundreds of millions of crypto users in India, registered users. So
it's like everywhere else then. Yeah,
yeah, okay. It's fairly robust, and not just crypto. These offshore websites also do use certain unofficial channels to make the payments or third parties to process their payments. So it's a bit like America where,
they use a
bouquet of flowers, some provider merchant or some e-commerce merchant. So
they're recoding it and stuff. And what I've heard in say certain Latin American countries and stuff as well is like there's agents on the ground collecting cash.
I mean, that is also something that we have heard and something that is probably happening.
Yeah, which would make sense. So there's always ways around this, right? It's just...
It's like a cat and mouse game, as someone put it. So, you cannot stop this 100%. I think government also knows this. But they want to stop the overt activity. They want to stop the hoardings on the ground. Mm. They want to stop the television activity.
Yeah.
Their idea is they don't want more and more people, newer people, to get layered into this. So I think
just making it as difficult as possible.
Yeah. I mean, we all agree that this cannot be stopped 100%.
So, no, not at all.
Not even in China, I mean.
No, definitely not.
For sure. And in India, there are processes to follow where even when you have to block even a single URL. So, it's not easy for the government to just keep doing this all the time, to just keep searching for new URLs that keep locking it. But of course, the idea is very clear to make this as difficult as possible.
Nice.
But at the same time, how the domestic regulations shape up will also be interesting.
If
and when.
I don't mean to sound negative. It's just, you know. You hear these things like new frameworks, new guidelines, new this, new that. But as we've already said, I mean, where you've got a burgeoning industry hoping for clarification, frequently, certainly in the early stages, the opposite is the reality. It's not more clear. It's just, but then I suppose it's like, in a way, it's kind of like early adoption of technology, you know. The first few things are probably going to be crap.
Yeah.
But you know that they're leading towards something better.
I hope so. I certainly hope so. And we all hope so here in India that the final regulations and the final legislation will be certainly something which won't be as garbled as this. It would be something that is more clearer and well-intentioned.
Well, never hurts to hope, does it? But, you know, when I was younger, I believed in Santa and the Tooth Fairy. And kids, if you're listening, I believed in them because they're real. Jay, thank you very, very much for your company again.
Thanks,
and,
Jay.
And your insight and your insight into Fintan's hair.
That's what we are inside, Don.
Do you spend more on shampoo than the average man, assuming I'm not the average man?
No, so when you've got – so
Jay's obviously got special stuff.
No, you've got to do – so the trick for curly hair is you got to do conditioner. So you use a lot less shampoo, but you use a lot more conditioner.
Wow.
And that gets the curls, where the shampoo makes it kind of fluffy. Any ladies out there with curly hair, I know exactly what I'm talking about. It's all about a really good conditioner designed for curly hair. I recommend Bumble and Bumble as the go-to brand. Just so.
But just in case you're a normal person who's not a chairman and very busy and very important, other brands that are more affordable are available.
Why go cheap on conditioner, John? It's just, you know.
Fenton, you're asking the wrong person. Why buy it at all, I say. But anyway, sorry. Thank you, Jay. If you've enjoyed this episode of the Gambling Files podcast, please find us on LinkedIn. Give us a big, juicy, succulent like. That nearly went wrong. You can find us under the name The Gambling Files Podcast. You can find us on Twitter under The Gambling Files. I think the handle is just @GamblingFiles. You can connect to myself, John Bruford, or Fintan Costello, also on LinkedIn. We're also both on Twitter. And you can find all of our previous episodes at www.thegamblingfiles.com. If you enjoyed it, please share. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your colleagues, and we'll see you next time.